Welcome to Women Worth Knowing, the radio program and podcast hosted by Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn.
Cheryl, we are going to hear part two of Twyla Ludwig. This woman had just a heart for Africa from a very young age. Prayed it through. That's her theme. Prayed it through, because it was many years from the point when she was really drawn to possibly being a missionary in Africa. And it was many years until the door opened for she and her husband and two of their three children to go. So when we left off with episode one, they had arrived in Kenya and they're in a small village, and you were just describing what the housing was like, what the people were like.
Yeah.
It just kind of comes alive. And so the time frame, what are we at now? We're at like 1930?
Probably we're still in 1927.
Okay.
And they're just adjusting to everything.
Yes.
They landed in October of 1927.
Okay.
So I think we're probably in November and December as they're beginning to settle into life in Kenya, Africa. And remember, they're Americans. They've lived on a
yeah.
farm. They're
in
used
Indiana,
to
Indiana.
Right.
There they are.
In Illinois.
Illinois.
And they're used to a certain standard, a certain way of life. And now they're going to live very primitively.
Mm-hmm.
And everything's different. Like, everything is different. The food is different. The ways are different. Even their ministry is different. So even though they'll be evangelizing, even though he'll be preaching, she'll also do some preaching too. We'll talk about that a little bit. And he's going to be doing, I forgot to mention, he had taken a dentistry course that was an 8-week dentistry course.
Oh my.
But because he had worked with so many animals on the farm, he's like, no problem. So he becomes...
Because John was a fix-it-all. He could fix the tractor.
Was.
He could fix
yes.
everything.
Yes.
Open your mouth. Let's see what I can fix
yes.
in there.
So he becomes the resident dentist.
Oh,
and
wow.
she becomes the resident. 1 year of an obstetrics
yes.
course, she becomes the resident, not just nurse, but doctor.
Oh.
There's nobody else who has medical training in Kema, on this missionary complex. And people, even before they learn the language, begin just to stream in. And Twyla and John are trying to learn the language, but duty calls. And they've got so much on their plate, you know, besides fixing up the house, you know, making a home, cooking and all those things that she has to do and all the adjustments, trying to learn the language. Right away, she's met with 100 patients a day.
Oh.
And the conditions are so extreme.
Yeah.
A couple times as she's meeting the needs of these patients, she doesn't have the right instruments. And she tells John, and John goes and makes some.
Of course he did.
Is that incredible? I mean, what a match made
yes.
by God. So, John worked on the teeth, and Twyla treated, you know, sometimes over 100 patients each day. But she did it wearing a white uniform with a helmet on her head. I have no idea what that helmet looked like. Oh, actually, there is a picture of her with the helmet on her head.
Really?
We should post that. We will post that. We will post some pictures. But she would go from patient to patient, asking about their ailments. And in the beginning, because Charles and Rosalind picked up the language right away, Charles was her translator. And sometimes he was so overcome by giggles, he could barely translate because of the way his mother was butchering the language and the things that she was asking them when she meant something totally
so
different.
So Charles and Rosalind are barely teenagers?
Barely. Mm-hmm. Charles
That's
is, yeah.
So typical that children, it's easier to pick up the language.
It is.
But then for them to be such a part of the ministry is just...
Yeah.
Has to be... Charles has his own story to tell. He told a lot of his mother's story here, but...
He tells a lot of his own story. Like he talks about... He had one friend, Sam Healy, who was not a Christian, and he just loved this kid. And this kid taught him how to hunt for the ants and how to catch ants and how to eat them. And he loved ants. That became one of his favorite treats in Africa. And he said they tasted like crunchy peanut butter. And later, you'll find out that he loved locusts, too, and learned how to, you know, hunt and catch and eat and roast locusts.
One of the trips when I was in Africa, it rained, and when it stopped, all the little locusts came up from the ground and just fluttered around. They looked beautiful, like little butterflies. And the African people I was with were saying that you catch them and you pull off the wings and eat them. And they, the same thing, they said that it tasted like peanut butter. I did not try it.
No, no.
I was trying to catch them, like, oh, look at the pretty little butterflies.
Yeah. Twyla would not eat it either. So you're in good company.
Okay.
So Twyla tried three ants, and he's like, no, Mom, you need a lot because they're really crunchy and good. Oh. And she's like, no. They even roasted them for Twyla, and she's like, no. But she tried three and, like, good enough. And she also, she went to try the locust, but she pulled off the head, which you're not supposed to do. That's a no-no. And once she pulled off the head, she was like, I can't do this, even though it was roasted. So Charles really adjusted to life right away. Twyla and John got to working right away. Well, Twyla was overjoyed when a man named Jairo came. He was a Christian, and he came for treatment. She was able to nurse him back to health, but he spoke perfect English, and she employed him immediately to be a translator and a teacher. He also would help John, but one of the greatest things that he did was he helped her to hire the right people to be the cooks and help her with the house so she could be freed up to do the work that she was doing. I don't think I mentioned this, but Twyla was only 5'2" and weighed 100 pounds. Mm. And she had one blue eye and one brown eye that the people in Kenya found so intriguing.
Oh, I can imagine.
But she was a force to be reckoned with. One time, she was asked to do a sermon, and she went on for 2.5 hours scolding the men for their mistreatment of their wives, seeing the plight of the women. So what would happen? One of her first cases was a woman who was in labor, and the baby had died because the witch doctor had said the way to get the baby out was for other women to jump on her stomach.
No.
Yes. And they felt like this was the best way to get the baby out.
Oh.
If the baby was born and had died in the process, then the wife would be severely beaten and was blamed for the death of the baby. After the wife had the baby, she was expected to work the garden. And the garden, you know, they subsisted on what was grown in the garden, mainly corn and other things. The corn they would take to market, but there were other crops that they would grow. The women were in charge of all the crops. And the husbands felt like if the women had babies, they couldn't take care of their own babies. They had to hire somebody or they had to have one of their other children watch the babies because the women needed to work. That's what they were for.
Wow.
Women were purchased with, you know, cows. Mm. So an average woman costs 4 cows. And so they were considered merchandise by these men. The women also had to make the beer for the men. And she said one time she went into a village and she saw these men all sitting around, you know, drinking beer. And they had like these long bamboo poles that they used as straws. And even 2 5-year-old boys sitting there drinking the beer with them while the women were, you know, working so hard. And the women were usually scarred and mutilated from the abuse of these men. And it would just, her blood would boil constantly. She could never look at an abused woman, a Kenyan woman, without raging inside over the abuse. And she was determined by the will of God, by the power of prayer, and by starting a school for women, that she was going to help the women of Kenya. And so she began to pray and pray and pray, because most of the work that she did was for the women, helping them with a broken arm or the abuse, and because of the abuse that they suffered. There were quite a few obstacles to her vision. The first was money. The second was prejudices by all the men and the witch doctor against the education of women.
Yeah.
And plus, the witch doctor was so revered in these little villages that they would, usually go with whatever the witch doctor said rather than what, you know, even seeing what Twyla and John had to offer, they would go with the witch doctor. She said many times part of the problem and the disease that the people suffered was because of the remedies of the witch doctor and the things that they would put on the sores of the people, sometimes, you know, mixing their spit in with dirt and larvae. I mean, just gross remedies. And she had to deal with all that. So she felt, though, that the very best way to change the heart of the people and open their hearts to Jesus was through teaching them. She wanted a school where she could train the women to read, write, sew, and learn other domestic skills, including basic nursing. And she began to pray and pray and pray. Well, when she wrote to the mission board said, "Not only can we not give you anything towards this school, we're in a crisis because now we're in the Depression years in the United States." Right. They said, "We have to half your support." So now they're living on half the support. So she's like, "Lord, I asked you.
Yes.
I knocked on the door and this is what happened." So again, what do you think she did, Robin?
I think she prayed it through.
She prayed it through.
Twyla did.
Yes. And the Lord gave her an inspiration. And so she wrote to the churches and the missionary board in the United States and she said, "Send me all your cast-off clothes. Just send them." And she asked the mission board, "Will you at least pay for the shipping of all the clothes, blankets, whatever people don't want anymore? Can you send them to us in Kenya?" And so they did. They sent it all to them in Kenya. And so she set about teaching the women how to sew. These women were masterful at sewing, as she taught them. And they began to make the most beautiful garments for themselves and for raising money for this for this
now
mission.
They have a skill and a trade.
Exactly.
And you blend that with an education, and women around the world are unstoppable. That's really, I've seen that as the like, what would you call it, the foundational building blocks for a lot of ministries around the world for women.
Yes.
To just empower them to be able to create something.
Mm-hmm.
And have that industry and then the education of how to move forward.
She also taught them how to make cookies and biscuits.
Mm.
And the interesting thing was then she would take all these wares that they had made and she would take them to Kismu and she would sell them. And at first she was told, "No, there's no place that you can sell." And she knocked on doors and knocked on doors because she was assured by the Lord that that was what to do. And finally, she found a hotel that said, "Okay, we'll give you this part of our lobby." Mm. And the bazaar was so successful, they sold everything. And she now had $125, which was not at all. They figured that they would need $1,000.
Mm.
So they kept making, they kept sewing. Well, then the Depression hit Africa, and the women who were buying the wares could not afford them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I have to just interrupt all this and say the best seller before had been the baby bonnet, and it became a fashion statement with the women of Kenya to wear baby bonnets as their hats, not for the babies, but for the women of Kenya.
Oh.
And she said it was just very, you know, considered among the Kenyans very chic to have a baby bonnet for a
But then
hat.
You did tell us that Twyla wore a helmet.
She wore a helmet. That's true.
Can't say much about the baby bonnet if she's walking around in a helmet.
Exactly. So true. So true. So anyway, the price of corn went so low. So these people have all this corn. They can't afford to buy because they've got all this corn and nobody's buying the corn. So Twyla bought, for that $125, she bought all their corn.
Oh.
And John said, "Twyla, what are you going to do with this corn?" She said, "I'm going to store it." So she stored it in her son Charles' room. She stored it in her daughter Rosalind's room. She stored it in the hallway. Finally, John said, "I have to build you a storage shed."
Yes.
So he built her a shed so they could move all the corn in there. Well, there's a problem with corn. And she wanted it with the husks on. There's a problem with corn. It's called weevils.
Yep.
And the weevils love the corn. And he said to Twyla, Twyla, you can't keep this corn. She said, I'm going to keep it till the price goes up. Wow. He said, by then it'll be destroyed by weevils. Mm-hmm. And he kept saying, you need to sell it. She said, nope, I'm praying. And the Lord told me not to sell it, not to sell it, not to sell it. And so then John started inventing all sorts of contraptions to get the weevils out. And he never found one to keep them from going in, but he found one to get rid of them. And so he would do this periodically, just getting rid of all the weevils. Huh. So he was able to preserve the corn. Well, in the meantime, there was a locust attack, and the locusts came to Kenya. And again, the people caught as many as they could and roasted them, and they lived on the locusts because mm-hmm. the locusts destroyed all their crops, all their food. It took absolutely everything. Mm. And it drove the price of corn way up. And you know what corn was untouched by the locusts? Twyla's corn. Untouched.
Well,
untouched.
I should have realized that.
By locusts.
I was thinking you were meaning like what
everywhere.
Kind of corn.
Yes.
But there it was.
There it was.
Protected and
mm-hmm.
wow.
Yes. And corn had dropped to below 3 shillings a pound. Now it went up to, and she had bought it for, you know, like 1 shilling a pound. Oh, no, she had actually bartered it for clothes for these women.
Mm.
And now she'd used the money and then she had bartered the rest and she kept collecting corn, more and more and more corn. Now she was able to sell all her corn for 12 shillings
Ooh.
A pound. It was a huge amount.
Yes.
And in that way, she was able to start on the school.
Mm.
But she was stressed about this school. She knew that the Lord wanted her to do it. She wanted to do it. She kept seeing the plight of these women, and she kept praying and praying. And she even went to the place of, Lord, am I doing something wrong? And, you know, confessing any bad attitudes or anything, because she's thinking, what is keeping the Lord from fulfilling his word mm-hmm. and supplying what I need? And so as she's praying earnestly out loud, the Lord speaks to her from 1 Peter, cast all your cares upon the Lord, for he cares for you. And he said, Twyla, you're too anxious. I'm going to do this. Just trust me. I've got the timing down. I've got the money in place. I've got everything. You just need to trust me.
Cheryl, that's the word for all of us today, isn't it?
Isn't it the word?
Yeah.
So with renewed joy, she cast all her care on the Lord. And whenever she became anxious, she had her son play a vinyl record on a phonograph that he had received from a donor in America. And this is the lyrics of the song, because Charles does not tell us what the name of this song was, but here are the lyrics. God is still on the throne, and he will remember his own. Though trials may press us and burdens distress us, he will never leave us alone.
That's good.
God is still on the throne.
Amen.
So Twyla began designing the school herself with drawings containing copious details. She was absolutely prepared for the day that the money would come in. Finally, in miraculous ways, the money was provided and the school was built. The first year, they had 12 students, and they named the school the Roslyn House because Roslyn's fiance from America had built it
uh-huh.
and designed it. They fell in love. Well, it was in the process. And Roslyn did go back to the United States with her husband. The girls at the school made their own mattresses from corn husks and fabric.
Because they had plenty.
From their donors.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
The sewing was so exquisite and looked so professional that they looked like designer pieces. I mean, Twyla said, I've never seen finer mattresses in my entire life. Steadily, the school began to grow until they had to build more buildings and then a domestic science building. Twyla had to design all the patterns that the girls used in the domestic science class for their sewing. So mm-hmm. she was always industrious, always working. By 1938, it was time for their first furlough. And she had had several bouts of malaria, and she desperately needed surgery. But by this time, they've already built almost 22 buildings on the property.
Wow.
They're still going every week to Kismu, and these young girls are now, they're running their little bazaar. They're bringing all their clothes, and they started making these tablecloths that became in demand because of the beautiful embroidery. And they were given sewing machines. They were treadle sewing machines, right?
Yep.
Because they didn't have electricity. I mean, that whole time, they didn't have electricity. Everything was with these treadle sewing machines. But these girls excelled at sewing. And they got behind the vision and they would say, we're building new Africa, where the women will be appreciated and loved. I mean, there were still incidents during this time. She had a wonderful cook whose father wanted to marry. She had become a Christian, and her father wanted to marry her off to an old man. And that was one of the problems, because the old men had all the money, but they were also polygamists. And they would bring the new wife in, who was really young. They would favor her for a couple of weeks, and then her life would become as full of drudgery as the other women. And if these women failed to produce a son or get pregnant right away, they were beaten by their husbands. The mortality rate among the children, the babies, was super high, not because of the mother's health, but because of what the witch doctors did, and because of the way the women had been misled to help a woman in childbearing. Yeah. And so again, she's working so hard to help them in all those areas. You know, I don't have enough time right now. There's got to be a part three, because there is so much more to Twyla that I want to cover in part three. I mean, we've only we've only just begun to talk about what this woman accomplished. I want to talk about what she did on her first furlough, because you'll be like, what? What did she do in just a year and a half? All the things that she accomplished and that John accomplished in that first year. And they really were going back, not only because it was time to rest and because they needed to put Charles in a school, but they were going back to train even more for the ministry in Kenya. And she had all these ideas of how the Lord would direct her. And so part of it was she needed surgery. We're going to raise money, but we're also going to train, and we're going to improve our own skills to go back and help these women.
Wow.
I mean, 5'2", 100 pounds.
Yeah.
And just a force to be reckoned with.
And just from the very beginning that the Lord put Africa on her heart, and then when she's there, even with the obstacles, that she had that assurance, this is what the Lord has called us to. And John as well.
Yes. But the fact that they didn't want to go back.
Yeah.
After, you know, 10 years of service, you know, they took the furlough. Most missionaries take their furlough at 5 years.
Right.
They didn't take it till 10. And the only reason they agreed to do it was because of her malaria and because she needed surgery. And what I forgot to tell you, too, is she had a really bad tooth, and she was saving up money to pay for her tooth to be fixed. And she used to stuff it with cloves to help with the pain.
Oh.
And she took the money that she had saved for that and put it towards the school.
Oh.
And she said, John, the Lord will provide another way. In fact, what she ended up doing is having her husband, John, pull her tooth. He was the dentist, remember?
So, oh, that's right. He had 8 weeks of training.
An 8-week course in dentistry.
Open your mouth.
He got really, really good at it. Wow. In fact, there's so many humorous stories in here, like about the time when he tried to do Twyla's job and help some patients, and he had to pray that they wouldn't die after he worked on them because of some of his farm remedies. You know, they had worked for his cows, but they didn't work for the Kenyans.
Oh, man. They were such a can-do couple.
They were. Like, and they were
just give it a try.
Yes.
See what happens.
And they were so in love with each other and so together. And, Charles will talk about the repartee between both of them and the fellowship and the prayer and just the unity. I mean, you just get, as I said, you just love Twyla. And again, John is 9 years older than she is. you know, this will come to play as we continue the story with Twyla Ludwig and her service in Africa.
Right, part three. I'll be there.
I'm so glad. I love doing it with you.
I do too.
So fun. All right, join us next week for part three of Twyla Ludwig.
For listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn. For more information on Cheryl, visit CherylBroderson.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. For more information on Robin, visit RobinGunn.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. Join us each week for a lively conversation as we explore the lives of well-known and not-so-well-known historical and contemporary Christian women. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode. Make sure you rate us on your podcast app, subscribe, and share it with a friend. Thank you again for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn.